It's my pleasure to introduce our first speaker, Katie Woodruff. She's had a 20-year career in strategic communications for public health, analyzing news content, and helping advocates use the power of mass communications to advance health public policy. Woodruff is now a doctoral student at the University of California at Berkeley, focusing on communications and culture change around abortion and reproductive health. She's the author of News for a Change, an advocate's guide to working with the media.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. It's really a pleasure to be here. It's such a great conference. So much going on. So, as Christina said, my background is in communications on a wide range of public health issues, and so I bring this research to you today in the spirit of a researcher and an advocate who is concerned about how communications has the power to shape the way public understands these issues and what happens in the realm of public debate. I have no relationships to disclose. I did this research at the invitation of some folks at ANSWER, the Advancing New Standards in Reproductive Health at University of California in San Francisco, and I'm very grateful to Diana Green Foster for her guidance and support on the project. Debbie Nguyen was my awesome co-coder on the project and provided a lot of administrative support, and I also want to thank Andrew Shane at Berkeley Media Studies Group, who gave me guidance on the sampling methodology. And thanks to everybody at ANSWER for fantastic support and sharing expertise with me along the way. So because we're not all in public health communications as a background, I want to just take a minute to talk about why I think it's important to pay attention to news coverage, because it plays such an important role in public policy. First, the news really has the power to set a policy agenda. It really puts a spotlight on important issues, and many people have noticed if you're not in the news, for all practical purposes, you don't exist in terms of public debate. But it also really has the power to shape how the public understands that issue. And so how the news is framed has really important implications for how people understand not just what the problem is, what causes a problem, who's responsible for doing something about the problem, and that's why we need to understand how abortion is covered in the news. And especially on issues where people might not have a lot of personal experience or don't think they have a lot of personal experience because they don't know that they know someone who's had an abortion, then the news can take on an even stronger role in how they understand the issue. And for those of us who would like to understand what the public thinks about this issue, this is one, albeit imperfect, proxy for understanding what kinds of things people might know about abortion. This study grew out of several pilot studies that I did, earlier analyses, and in those earlier looks at how different aspects of abortion and contraception as well are covered in the news, I really noticed a real absence of any women's experience or stories in news coverage, and so that was one of my questions going into this research as well, especially in coverage of later abortion. We saw a very strong emphasis on the fetus as opposed to emphasis on the woman, and so we wanted to look in broader coverage of abortion, whether that laid out as well, and then in general just what's included and what's left out and covered. Those are my questions. I have so much to tell you about today that I'm going to go kind of quickly over the methodology so I can get into the findings. If any of you would like to discuss this in more detail, I'm happy to answer questions. It is a content analysis of three major U.S. newspapers. Usually when we're looking at news coverage in order to understand policy implications, we look at the most important papers from a policymaker perspective, not necessarily a community perspective. And those tend to be the New York Times, the paper of record for the country, Washington Post, obviously very important for federal policy. And then I also looked at coverage of the Associated Press, which is a national news service that provides stories to newspapers all across the country. I searched the Nexus database for 8 constructed weeks in 2013. And constructed weeks is a sampling terminology. It's to control for temporal variations in news coverage because newspapers cover different things on Sundays than they do on Tuesdays. So if you want 8 weeks, you can't just take 56 days at random. You have to have 8 Mondays, 8 Tuesdays, 8 Wednesdays. So those are the constructed weeks. And the search term was any story that included the word abortion, and that yielded us 373 unique pieces. This is from an earlier study that showed if you get 6 weeks of news coverage, that approximates an entire year's worth of coverage in terms of the content. Once you get beyond 6 constructed weeks, you don't really get much more data. I went for 8 weeks because in my initial sample of 6, I found several days where there were no abortion stories at all, so I oversampled in order to make sure that we had at least those 56 days of news coverage. And then we had 2 coders. We had intercoder reliability for each variable. mostly in the 0.8 to 0.9 range, and I'll tell you about the lower ranges in a bit. That means not as much agreement in terms of how we saw the stories. We coded every piece for what news source it came from, the date it was published, and how deeply it covered abortion, whether it was just a mention or something more substantive. And for anything that was either significant or substantive, we coded those for what story type they were, story topic, and some key frame. This is really an iterative process. You read the entire sample, see what you think is there, develop a coding instrument, go back and do it in more depth. And as a result, it's a process that's both objective and subjective, and it has some limitations related to that. I hope, the findings, as you can see, about a third from each of the three key news sources. And the first finding is most of the time that abortion is in the news, it's only a mention. Very rarely is it covered in any more depth than that. And I will tell you a little bit about those 228 stories. This is the context in which abortion is just mentioned when it shows up in the news. Of course, very prominent is candidates' views on abortion, especially in 2012. There was a controversial Virginia governor's race between a very pro-life and a very pro-choice candidate that got a lot of coverage, especially in the Washington Post. But in all kinds of races, in school board races, in city council races, there could just be a sentence saying this candidate is for abortion rights or this candidate is against abortion rights. Of course, we had a new pope last year, and he gave an interview saying that the church didn't need to be spending so much time talking about things like abortion and gay marriage, and that got quoted, just that one line got quoted in a lot of profiles of the pope. The Republican Party spent a lot of time in 2013 talking about whether they should go more towards the Tea Party side or more towards the more moderate Republican side on a range of issues, including abortion. And then there's a category that we called, picked up this phrase from one of the news stories, abortion and other hot button issues. That there's literally so many times when abortion would show up as just one of the many controversial and divisive topics in American politics. Immigration, gun control, school vouchers, abortion, it's sort of all equivalent. Stories about abortion in other countries. There was amazingly a large number of stories about the Texas abortion bill and filibuster and Wendy Davis that managed not to include the word abortion beyond one mention. These might be profiles of her shoes, but not necessarily anything substantive about the abortion policy. It was also covered quite a lot in the more substantive, which I'll show you in a minute. ECOC, that's emergency contraception being made available over the counter, and abortion was mentioned in that context somewhat, and then Supreme Court rulings on gay marriage that brought up the issue of abortion as another controversial Supreme Court decision. So what we found, my lowest intercoder reliability was on the difference between significant and substantive. In my coding definitions, I had a definition, and we ended up not really agreeing on how that played out in reality. So we lumped those all together. So for the rest of the coverage, I'm going to tell you about the 145 pieces that were more than just a single or one or two mention of abortion in a piece and how those look and how that coverage differs from the mentions. First of all, about three-quarters of those stories were news or analysis pieces. 11% were blog posts, 9% opinion and column pieces, 6% letters to the editor, and 2% editorial. Typically, in previous studies that I've done and we at Berkeley Media Studies Group have done looking at other public health issues in the news, it usually breaks down about two-thirds news coverage and one-third editorial. So this is a real opportunity for advocates and researchers in this field to be pitching more editorials to editorial boards, writing op-ed pieces, writing letters to the editor. It's a good opportunity to influence the debate on these issues. And it's currently, abortion is underrepresented on the opinion pages compared to other public health issues that we've looked at. And then the topics that were covered within those more substantive stories. So again, this slide and the continuing slides are just for the 145 more substantive stories. As you can see, the first two categories together are state abortion restrictions, which were the most newsworthy topic in abortion last year. Together, they made about a third of all the substantive stories. Half of those about on Texas, and half of them on every place else that was not Texas. And other stories that were substantive were about political analysis. This is not necessarily about abortion itself, but about, is abortion a winning issue for Democrats? Do Republicans have a woman problem? And using abortion as an example of those sort of political course, the Dr. Kenneth Gosnell trial happened during 2013. He's the abortion doctor who's responsible for death and other charges, and he was convicted on murder. That got, unfortunately, quite a bit of coverage. And then there were international abortion stories, several stories on the woman in Ireland who died because she was denied an abortion despite her fetus having, I guess, she was well into miscarriage and ultimately died of sepsis. And then a woman in El Salvador who was denied an abortion despite her fetus having no head, no brain, and she also had to get fairly far along before she could get an abortion. Nope, she finally had to deliver by C-section at 27 weeks, and then the baby died. Anyway, those got, you know, again, extreme stories that got some attention, Supreme Court cases, and a little bit on Catholic teachings on abortion that were more in-depth than just the mentions. And then everything else was just a handful of stories per topic. So that's the kind of stuff that got a lot of coverage in more depth. And then one of the most important things we do when we do this kind of analysis is to look at some of the language that's used that might shape how people think or feel about this issue. So we went coding for the kinds of frames that I thought we would see a lot and sort of counted how much this language shows up. First was if the story mentioned women, patients, the mother, those we categorized, and I'll tell you more about that in depth in a moment. You can see that's about 60% of the sample. We looked for language that talked about the fetus as human or did anything to kind of personalize the fetus as a baby. And an example is in one article about an abortion protest, it noted that opponents of abortion carried signs with statements such as, a fetus is a child. So that statement, a fetus is a child, would be coded as fetus as human. We also looked for fetal pain, and this is the theory that fetus feels pain at some point in development, and so abortion beyond that is inhumane. Did not see it as often as I thought we might, based on my preliminary sample, and then also look to see when the fetal pain is mentioned, do they also mention that the science on that is, fill in the blank, disputed, medically dubious, completely bogus, different articles or opinion pieces use different language. But as you can see, only half of the time that fetal pain was mentioned did they include the fact that that's actually a disputed scientific claim. And then constitutional rights is another very strong, very commonly used argument, especially on the pro-choice side, the kind of language that suggests that women have the right to privacy and the Constitution has decided this already and we shouldn't be arguing about this anymore. People made those kinds of assertions. Here is a representative who was asked about a 20-week ban and she said, the Supreme Court has spoken and this bill is unconstitutional. Next question. I think we would really like in our field to be able to dismiss these kinds of claims by saying they're unconstitutional. And at least I think people would like that because it seems to show up as one of our arguments. But it doesn't seem to be a very effective argument when you've got people on the other side talking about how we're murdering babies. So that's one of the concerns that I have in terms of the impact of these frames. And then finally, we looked for any women's personal stories. This is any time a woman's own experience of unintended pregnancy or abortion, whether she's telling her own story or someone else is telling her story, whether she is named or not, the broadest possible category I could find of a woman's own experience of pregnancy and abortion, and it showed up in 14% of these stories. And I'll give you more detail on that in a minute. But first I wanted to break down this first category for you a little more, woman, patient, mother, because remember my initial question was how does the woman versus the fetus compare in coverage? And I was like, oh, look at this, woman's 60%, that's pretty good. Maybe that's a great statement, but when you actually look at it, it's a little more complicated. So the first category, when I went back and sort of created sub-frames within that category, was the negative impact of abortion restrictions on women. And there are cases here, like a newspaper reporting, that when these two clinics close in South Texas, the only abortion providers in the area, they would then force women seeking abortions to travel a few miles across the border into Mexico rather than driving 4 hours to San Antonio. Another person said, in 70 years of experience, what is constant is that women, no matter how they live, will go to great lengths to end an unwanted pregnancy, even risking their lives. So there is that kind of dramatic language about what women are having to contend with in this more restrictive atmosphere. And there's language also saying that these various state restrictions are attacks on women's health, their rights, their dignity, and those kinds of mentions of women showed up about 17% of the time. Then there's language talking about the life of the mother, that abortion might be allowed in other countries or in certain policies to preserve the life of the mother. That phrase sometimes was all that would show up in reference to a woman within a given abortion story, but we coded it. Dr. Gosnell's patients were obviously portrayed as victims of his horrible practices. That showed up in 12% of the stories. The idea that abortion restrictions are actually meant to be protective, that we need to protect women from horrible, unsafe abortion, showed up about 12% of the time. The concept that women can be trusted and should be trusted to make their own decisions, a great concept, showed up only 6%. And then sometimes women showed up as advocates or voters, and in this, when they did, they almost always were balanced. In this, as an example, this is describing testimony. Some women shared how they felt their abortions were horrible mistakes, while others said their abortions gave them a second chance. Some cited the Bible in calling for a total ban on the procedure, and some told lawmakers to stop interfering with their right to decide when or if they have children. So journalists are very careful to present both sides of the issue when they're presenting women as advocates or voters on the issue. So what this means is, despite this category of women showing up quite a lot, when you actually go and look at it, and have sort of color-coded the valence of each of these, the yellow ones are ones that might support framing on women's access and women's rights to abortion care, and the blue ones are ones that actually would support an anti-choice framework. And you can see that they show up roughly half and half. So that women category actually breaks down to half what might be construed sort of feminist or supportive, and half showing women as vulnerable or potential victims of abortion. And then finally, I wanted to tell you more about these 22 stories that contain women's personal stories, because I think the ones that are chosen to be illustrated are interesting for us all to consider. By far the largest category were the patients of Dr. Gosnell who died or suffered in various ways. Then next was the woman in Ireland who died from being denied an abortion. The woman in El Salvador who suffered by having to wait a long time before she got an abortion despite her own horrible health problems. There was a woman who died after an abortion at 33 weeks. She was a kindergarten teacher from New York, and it turned out she had a very rare reaction to abortion that apparently is just as likely to happen after a regular childbirth as after abortion. But that fact only showed up in one of those two stories, not the other. And then there were a couple of cases, again, of providers telling their own patient stories, such as a doctor who said without access to his services, they'll do drastic things. Some might even commit suicide. And another saying he has seen women take various concoctions hoping to end pregnancies. Others have been beaten by boyfriends who pounded their abdomens with bats. So we included that as well. They're not women telling their own story, but other people reporting on what might be the consequence of some limited policies. There was one great example that I loved of just briefly talking. It was mainly the story about abortion protesters, but it said an abortion protester outside a clinic was holding a sign emblazoned with the single word, life. "Your baby is beautiful," he tells a patient entering the clinic. "I already have 4 beautiful babies at home," she replies to him. So that was my one woman entering in a clinic. You see how desperate we were to find any woman's voice? It's like we counted that as a woman's story, right? It's a little snapshot into her life and why she's there. And then the Turnaway study, which is a study being done at ANSWER at UCSF, which compares women who have had abortions to women who were turned away, and most of whom went on to have their babies. There was one story that just turned up randomly in our sample about that study, and so that journalist found 2 women to compare, one who was denied an abortion and had the baby, and one who didn't, and then the story talked about the outcomes on their life. So, as you can see, most of the time these stories show up, they are focusing on the rare and the tragic, and definitely not at all the typical abortion story. So, finally, I just wanted to say, abortion is rarely covered in depth. It's mostly mentioned as a kind of a political or moral hot-button issue. And really, in fact, what I hope you take away is that most of the time when abortion is in the news, it is not about abortion at all as we understand and talk about it in the field. It is really this kind of dog whistle of reaction that is really problematic for how people understand the issue. Good news, from my perspective, is the state abortion restrictions are very newsworthy, and they're getting a lot of attention. I think that reflects people's concern, growing concern on that issue. As from an agenda-setting perspective, that's good news. The fetus does not yet outweigh the woman in debate, but again, it's problematic because often women are portrayed as victims of abortion instead of beneficiaries, and the actual women's stories are very rare and focus on the tragic. This leaves me with a lot of questions. What are the implications for this kind of coverage in terms of how people understand the issue and how it affects public policy? what would be the impact if we had more stories. Not that that's easy to do, but what would happen if there were more stories of women's experience in the public conversation, and what are the potential pitfalls of trying to include stories, and what kinds of stories, and what happens to the women who tell their stories. Those are questions that I'm interested in exploring, and any of you who are interested in those too, I would love to talk to you more about it. And thank you very much.